Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and we are back at you with double coverage. Been gone a couple of weeks, getting some vacation in. Logan, did you see a Major League Baseball game?
I did not, unless you count TV. I did catch plenty on TV, and I played a lot of MLB The Show on my PlayStation. So I don't think that equates to actually being in a game in person, but you know, that's as close as I got.
Well, no, you know, we're still trying to get you to that Major League game for the first time. But, excuse me, I know you've seen some Mississippi State camp. The Bulldogs are underway several days into it, and the Rebels will start most likely on Sunday. They'll have their media day on Monday. We're going to talk about camp. We're going to talk a little NCAA investigation as well. Nothing really new to report, but there does seem to be a lot of speculation out there, and Logan, that's when you what you have when you don't have information, you have speculation. So we're kind of looking at this right now, and I know there are a lot of different things out there, and just wondering if the tone has changed, or are we just in that period where the school's not talking, the NCAA's not talking, and everyone else is. The school, of course, is waiting for a date to appear before the NCAA's Committee on Infractions, and this could drag on a while. I've seen several people speculate that the case will carry into 2017. The tone sent out from the administration has always been that it believes the sanctions eventually handed down will be a manageable situation. Now, those are my words, not theirs, but the manner in which they've spoken about this, a carefully guarded manner, has never been one of Rome is burning. Sanctions are coming, we know that, and more will come than what the school has self-imposed. You can be sure of that. And those sanctions will be felt. But the vibe from the school has always been that it will be able to work through what is going to be handed down. Well, when you don't have information, you have speculation. And the fact that the school and the NCAA are not really talking right now doesn't keep other parties from talking. Now, I did speak with a source very familiar with the investigation earlier this week, and he referred to the current situation as, quote, muddled rumors. The source went on to say that it is very confident the investigation will eventually conclude with a positive resolution, but what exactly that means is anybody's guess. How would you, as an Ole Miss fan, define positive? To me, that would mean no bowl ban and no head coach suspension. The source didn't get that specific, but that's what it would look like to me. Another way of looking at it is if there is a bowl ban, the investigation carrying into 2017 might not be a bad thing. I mean, it's possible that Shea Patterson, as a sophomore in 2017, could be the kind of quarterback that could lead Ole Miss to the college football playoff and a national championship as a first-year starter. But that's not typically what happens with rookie quarterbacks. The Rebels have the SEC's best quarterback this season. Chad Kelly is the reason there are high expectations for this year's team. I think it could have a damaging effect if a ruling comes down in October that says there's no bowl game for Ole Miss. Could be that by that time Ole Miss finds itself in the thick of the SEC West race and in contention for the playoff. We'll see. The month of September, which includes games against Florida State, Alabama, and Georgia, will let us know if that's the case or not. So that's kind of where we stand with the NCAA investigation into Ole Miss football. As we mentioned, Logan, you've got some actual on-the-field football to talk about. Before we get there, folks, I want to remind you about the other Daily Journal podcast productions that you can search for, one being The Memo, our news podcast three times a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, all things going on in Northeast Mississippi. And be sure each Wednesday to look for Prep Rally, all things high school sports with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. And Logan and I are back in the saddle and back in a more regular schedule, and we'll be with you every Thursday, maybe a Friday, one of those 2 days, with double coverage, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss. Now, Logan, Bulldogs getting on the field. What do you know so far?
Well, I know that I'm not going to take 2 weeks of vacation prior to jumping straight into football again. It was just kind of – I don't have that buffer week kind of like you've got, which would have been nice to kind of ease back into the swing of things and kind of get adjusted back to going things. I went from doing nothing to just, you know, work, you know, and it's just kind of a shock to my system. You know, I'd kind of been on vacation mode there for a while, so I jumped right back into it. My first day back was actually Mississippi State's on campus media day, which was held Monday. Typically, they hold that after a few days of practice, and this year they decided to hold it the day that the players reported back. So it was a lot of looking ahead, not looking back on a little bit of practice, and just kind of previewing what they thought of fall camp, and then the next day they jump right into it. As far as, you know, what I've been able to see, the media was permitted to watch the first six periods of practice the first 2 days. Typically, they run 16 to 18 periods of practice, so we get to see about a third of what, you know, actually took place. And, of course, Parrish, you know, the first.
Yeah, so how are the Bulldogs stretching, Logan?
Exactly.
How's that stretch going?
That was about what I was supposed to get into. You know, the first little bit of practice, they stretch, and then they go in, they break off into some individual groups. So, you know, catching, you know, receivers are catching balls off the jugs machines. Linemen are hitting the seven-man sled or five-man sled, two-man sleds. Same thing with the defensive line. You know, defensive backs are working on the jumping up and catching the ball. Quarterbacks are throwing to themselves. So really just not a whole lot that you're able to see. You can kind of see who's out there and what positions they're playing. And that's kind of been the story of, you know, they had some guys that are switching positions a little bit early on in fall camp. Some of those may stick. Some of them may not. I guess most notably is Jamal Peters. You know, he played safety his first year at Mississippi State and then switched to wide receiver back in the spring. State's receiver numbers were kind of down. They switched him over there to see how he would do. He ended up breaking his pinky. So it's hard to catch football when you've got a broken pinky. So he didn't do too well over there at receiver. And then they signed two late wide receivers late in the process. I think they signed them in June, if I'm not mistaken. And both of those guys enrolled in July. So that helped the numbers there at receiver. And it allowed Jamal Peters to come back to safety, and I think that's kind of a natural spot for him. You know, they like what they have in Kevon Coleman and Brandon Bryant and Mark McLaurin, and that's kind of why they decided to move Peters back over there to receiver to see if he could help out there. He's such a dynamic athlete, but he's moved back over to safety where, you know, he'll do fine. He had a great freshman season. He was a little disappointed in his freshman season. He had a little higher expectations for himself than what he actually did out there on the field. But I thought he got better as the season goes along, and that's kind of what to be expected of a true freshman. A couple other people changing positions. Gary Green played primarily a middle linebacker. You know, he's kind of a bigger guy, you know, about 6'4", probably in the 240-ish range. He's going to play the Viper position. That's a spot that they, you know, it's a position that Peter Sermon brought in. It's kind of a hybrid outside linebacker and defensive end spot. So they're going to try to get some rush off the edge with Gary Green with his length. And I think that'll be a natural fit for him. Now, it could be a situation where he plays a little bit of both. I mean, he knows the inside linebacker position, but he's behind Richie Brown right now. And obviously you want to give as many reps to Richie Brown as you can to have that experience out on the field. He's kind of the leader of that defense. So they like what they see out of Gary Green. They're trying to get him on the field and just find another way to do that. They switched their offensive tackles around in the spring, Martinez Rankin was playing right tackle, and Justin Senior, who has been State's right tackle for the last 2 years, moved over to left. Well, those guys have flip-flopped here in the fall. Justin Senior's back over there at right. Martinez Rankin, who redshirted last year, he was the number one junior college offensive tackle in the country, redshirted his first year at Mississippi State. They really like what they've got in him, and said he could have played last year, but, you know, really no sense in you've got a junior college guy with 2 years of eligibility. He would have been in a backup role last year. Really no sense in wasting a year if you've got the numbers and got the depth on the offensive line to do that. So they redshirted him, and now they've got him for 2 years and project him to be a two-year starter for him. And if they can get that out of a left tackle, that's pretty good right there. And you have a couple other guys change of position. Maurice Smitherman is going to play a position that Peter Sermon called DB. It's kind of a hybrid cornerback safety spot. You know, I think they could have came up with a better creative name than just yeah. DB, but that's what they're calling it right now. And then Trevor Jung is another JUCO guy that redshirted last year. He played in the Viper position in the spring. He's actually going to shift over and play the other outside linebacker position, which we've kind of come up with a new name for that too. Peter Sermon calls that Star. So, you know, I know Ole Miss has some crazy names on their defense for some of these positions. Looks like Mississippi State's kind of falling in that same mold with some of these different names that they've got going on too. So,
but you know, you got Viper and Star, man. DB just that seems lacking.
Right.
You got to get more creative than that.
You know, back in the 90s, you know, back when you covered State Fair, they had the Dog Safety. I thought that was a pretty cool name. But yeah, it's all these weird names. You know, I don't know what was wrong with outside linebacker and strong safety and free safety. You know, there's really nothing really wrong with that. But, you know, hey, whatever floats your boat, I guess. But, you know, I know a lot of the camp talk from Mississippi State's centered around the quarterback battle. They've got four guys vying for that spot to replace Dak Prescott. And according to Dan Mullen and Brian Johnson, all four of those guys have a chance. And they're going to split the reps 25% for each of them. And so far throughout the first 2 days, they've been happy with how they've been able to divide up the reps. And it's not just that one guy's going to get 25% of the reps. They're dividing amongst the three offenses as well. You know, a guy like Nick Fitzgerald, who I think is probably the front runner for this job, is getting 25% reps with the first team and the second team and the third team. You know, so they're just splitting them up. And it was neat. You know, your eyes were kind of wanting to see who got the first snap of the first practice. You know, all eyes were kind of on that. And Nick Fitzgerald got that first snap, and you kind of thought that was natural. Like I said, you think he's the front runner, but the reason he got the first snap was he won a game of rock, paper, scissors amongst the other quarterbacks. Seriously, that's how they decided who got the first snap, was rock, paper, scissors. And they did something similar back in the fall. Back in the spring, the guy that got the first snap was the guy that had the highest GPA. So they're doing different things, but they're dividing the snaps amongst those guys. You know, Nick Fitzgerald, Elijah Staley, Nick Tiano, and Damian Williams are all, you know, still in the mix. And I know a lot of people think that's probably a negative, that you don't have a quarterback decided, or if you don't have it down to two by now. But I look at it as it's still a positive. I mean, you've got that much talent at that position. I mean, it's not like that they're just handing the reins over to this guy by default just because Dak Prescott graduated. I mean, these four guys are very talented. And one thing I did think that was kind of surprising on Monday during the media day is Dan Mullen said he wouldn't be surprised if one of these guys transferred if they don't win the starting job. And he said, you know, he would love to find out who the starter was going to be. He didn't want to draw this process out any longer than he has to, but he's going to let it, you know, kind of play out and made the best man in. When somebody starts separating themselves, then they'll obviously get more reps and they'll go ahead and get that guy prepared to be the starter. But so far that hasn't happened. It probably won't happen until later on in camp, possibly even later on into the season. I mean, they've got that first game against South Alabama, and then they jump into conference play against South Carolina the next week. So it could be a situation where they go into the first game and they play everybody and kind of see where things shake out by the end. But, you know, Dan was really open about talking about the quarterback possibly transferring. He said he would be fully supportive of that if they decided to do that. He didn't blame a quarterback for wanting to go play, and he said he would help them out transferring wherever they needed to play to transfer to play. You know, so he said there would be no hard feelings in that. You know, it's an open competition, everybody's going to get a chance to do that, but it's going to be something to watch. And it's, you know, it's a situation where we in the media can't watch anymore. You know, I mean, we're done with practice. I won't see another Mississippi State football practice until December. If Mississippi State is fortunate enough to go to another bowl game, you know, I won't see another practice between now and then. So it's going to be a lot of guesswork and a lot of what the coaches and players tell us over the next few weeks, months.
Well, and the most important things, the most important words in a situation like that, Logan, are "he said."
Right.
Because you just attribute as much as you can, and if what he said turns out to be bogus, then you've written "he said."
Right. You know? And if I write a column, it's "I think."
That's right. That's right. It's speculation at this point. And, you know, and that honestly, that should be disturbing to readers and listeners. But, you know, that's just kind of that's the trend. Certainly Mississippi State is not alone in access and you know, how it plays things close to the vest. I mean, that is certainly the way things are trending most places. I think Ole Miss is a little bit better in terms of what they allow us to view with practice and whatnot. Quarterbacks, Logan, it looks like Dan is almost anticipating a transfer, and I would say that he's on the money to do that. When you got four guys, I mean, you know, nothing speaks to a player like playing time, and, you know, if you go through a full-fledged competition and you finish third or fourth, I would think that a transfer would be on your radar. Now, with some guys, it's not, but, you know, that's fairly common. Devontae Kincaid playing at Grambling this year after he did not win the competition last year at Ole Miss. And with regard to four quarterbacks, the downside of that, if that job isn't completely settled by the season opener, is, man, you're trying to get reps in game action for a lot of different guys, and nobody really gets settled. Ole Miss played three quarterbacks last year against Tennessee Martin in the opener, and it's hard for guys to get in a rhythm in the game that way.
Yeah, and the thing with the quarterbacks, too, is they're all still pretty young. I mean, Damian Williams is, I guess, got the most experience of that group, and he's still got 2 years of eligibility. He's a redshirt junior. Both Fitzgerald and Staley are redshirt sophomores, and Tiano is a redshirt freshman. Dan did say that he didn't expect Tiano to be that guy that transferred. He's, you know, and I think Tiano is going to be Mississippi State's quarterback of the future. Whether he wins the job this year, if it takes another year or two for that to happen, he's going to be their quarterback of the future. He's that good. He's that talented. And Dak Prescott even said so, that, you know, Nick Tiano is way more advanced at this stage of his career than he was at that stage. And something about Tiano, he's got that it factor that Prescott had, kind of that leadership ability. The team respects him and will kind of follow him. So he's got that going for him, whereas probably these other quarterbacks are kind of lacking in that area. And that's one of the things he has beneficial. But the negative to Tiano is he's the youngest of that group. But definitely he's a name to remember, because whether it happens this year or sometime in the future, he's going to be the guy for State down the line.
Well, shifting gears a little bit, Ole Miss will get underway, I expect, on Sunday with some sort of practice, some sort of walkthrough or some type of gathering. Now, Media Day is the next day on Monday the 8th, and you know, usually by the time Freeze meets with the media, Ole Miss coach Hugh Freeze, they've gotten a couple of workouts in under their belt. So, you know, at some point Sunday, I think the Rebels will get on the field for the first time. No quarterback controversy at Ole Miss. I mean, you know, Chad Kelly and his off-the-field issues seem like light years away. I mean, he has been a model teammate and citizen. He watches a lot of film. You don't see him spending a lot of time on social media. You don't hear stories about Chad Kelly going out in the public very much. I mean, it's just, you know, he has come into a situation where he knew that he had used up a lot of chances as a college athlete, and he has made the most of this opportunity off the field, but certainly on the field. And frankly, last year it took Freeze a little longer than most people would have liked, I'm sure, to settle that quarterback situation and watch Kelly distance himself from Ryan Buchanan and Devontae Kincaid. That Alabama game was the third game on the schedule, and of course Kelly was the starter by then. There was no doubt, but there were some opportunities to get a lot more reps before then, but the Rebels were sorting through some things in that quarterback competition. Looking at this group right now, you know, a lot of losses. You know, three first-round NFL draft picks. You don't have that type of talent drain and not feel it. But, you know, the position I think that is the biggest concern for Ole Miss going into camp is left tackle. I mean, that's the number one concern, in my opinion, trying to replace Laramie Tunsil. Some people say you can mask issues at left tackle by keeping in an extra back or a tight end or moving the quarterback around out of the pocket or just calling plays that can help you protect a little better with your other players. But if you do those things, you're taking weapons away from the offense, and that's not the best plan. Tunsil was an elite player. There's no denying how good the Ole Miss offense was when he returned from a seven-game suspension. Part of that had to do with Kelly's development and comfort level late in the year. A lot of it was Tunsil. It showed up in the run game when the Rebels averaged just 88 yards on the ground against Alabama, Vanderbilt, Florida, and Memphis, but then averaged 206 yards on the ground when they went 5-1 in the games Tunsil played. I mean, look, they scored 52 points in the only Tunsil game they lost, so it's kind of hard to pin that on your left tackle. The depth chart right now has Jeremy Liggins, number one at left tackle, followed by Alex Givens, the redshirt freshman, or Talbot Byes, a senior walk-on. Five-star freshman Greg Little will join the mix when camp starts. A lot of people think he will move in and take over that position. It's hard to start on the offensive line, particularly at left tackle, as a freshman. And even Tunsil did not start from the very first game of his career. He moved into the lineup about the third game at Texas in 2013. And I go back to, when I look at this competition, Logan, I go back to 2009 when the Rebels were trying to replace Michael Orr at left tackle. And they went with Bradley Sowell, who was pretty young then, maybe a sophomore, I forget exactly. Sal grew into the position, but he struggled early. And Jevin Snead at quarterback that year went from 26 touchdown passes and 13 interceptions in 2008 to 20 touchdowns and 20 interceptions in 2009. He could never distance himself from the turnovers. And that wasn't all because of who was playing at left tackle, but it was clear that Snead had an issue in trusting his protection. That was clearly something that affected Jevin Snead that year. I think Chad Kelly will be savvy enough to adapt and get things done in different ways if necessary, but the Rebels bring something more. You know, if they bring something more than mediocre at left tackle, that will give him the best chance to pick up where he left off last season. Folks, I want to play an interview for you from earlier in the week with Deuce McAllister, the former Ole Miss running back, who had a long career with the New Orleans Saints, became their all-time rushing leader, and now he is excited to take on a new role as color analyst with the Saints radio team. I caught up with Deuce a little bit during the week, and we talked about this new opportunity for him in broadcast. All right, Deuce, well, tell me, I mean, in this position as a color analyst, right? Is that right, in the booth with Jim Henderson?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Obviously, former players bring knowledge of the game, but is there something that you have to learn about broadcasting to effectively communicate?
Well, I think it's always good to be able to have a little knowledge as far as broadcasting is concerned. So It's always a work in progress. And, you know, one of the things that was surprising to myself when I first got involved with it was just, just the sponsorship ads and just being able to add those in and to be able to cut to a commercial, acknowledging a certain sponsor. It's just not the game of football, you know, and a lot of times you have to, you don't want to be too technical with football terms. You want people that have probably never played or played it at a certain level to be able to understand as well.
Are you excited, though, I guess, just to be able to analyze football as it's going on and just talk about it like that over the air with thousands of people?
Yes, sir. I'm definitely excited. I mean, for me, it's a way to be able to still stay involved with the game and still be able to connect with the fan base and, you know, just try to teach them what I've learned and what I see to be able to tell the story as I see it unfold.
Now, didn't you do some sideline work with WWL? Have you done that already?
Yes, sir. I've done some sideline work with them. And then last year, I even had an opportunity to call a couple games last year. So I've had my feet wet, so to speak, a little bit in it. And now just being able to do it long term or full term, you know, it's always interesting. It's going to be a challenge, so to speak, but it's one that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. What games did you call last year?
It was basically the last four. Last year, once we knew that Hokie was, just going through his chemotherapy and dealing with his cancer and everything, then I was just stepping in when he wasn't available. You know, there was a couple road games. Tampa was one that I went on and called. Atlanta was another one. And, back at home, being able to serve on the sideline, that's what I did with the sideline reporter, Christian Garrett.
So how did the booth experience go for you, those games? Was it pretty good?
It was pretty good. You know, I got pretty positive feedback. And like I said, you know, probably the most thing for me was just getting familiar with the team, even though I still followed it last year. You know, you want to still be familiar with your team, and you know, you find yourself at times not trying to be too homerish, you know, just because you are the home radio station, but at the same time, you know, you're pulling for those guys as well.
Well, at times when you're not homerish and you are critical, what are your relationships like with players? Do you have to how does that go when you see them the next day?
That's probably the toughest part, you know, not only players, but the coaching staff as well, just because you do have a relationship with most of those guys. You know, a couple of them I played with. And so, you know, you're still friends with a lot of them. And like I said, I would much rather to brag on them and, you know, congratulate them than to really be able to call out a player for his play or, you know, just a staff member for, you know, a questionable call. But that's a part of it. And that's what you have to do at times.
Now, WWL being the flagship station and whatnot, what is their approach to criticism of the Saints? Do they give you a limit? Do they have that discussion with you? What is that like?
No, it's not necessarily a discussion with you. Know, they expect you to be a professional, and you know that's part of it. It comes with the territory. Obviously, when the team is winning and doing well, then it's better for us. But I mean, at the end of the day, you have to do a job, and if it's to be critical, that's what you have to do.
Well, Deuce, will you be part? And I know you and I spoke on the show a couple of weeks back, but I guess how often will you be part of the afternoon weekday show?
Actually, you know, right now I'm up in West Virginia with the team, and you know, it's unique just because you feel like that you're one of the daily beat reporters in a sense. And you know, my role and Jim Henderson's role will not necessarily be that. You know, that's what Bobby does, that's what Christian does, and you know, we have some other guys that kind of follow it in that sense and that aspect. But for us, we wanted to get a good feel for the team, you know, and you want to be able to tell a true story and a true description of this squad. And so for us to be able to come up a few weeks while they're in training camp and, you know, just to get to know the players that are new a little bit better and just to be able to tell what you see a little bit better, that's what we're here. And so while I'm here, while Bobby and Deke, they do the daily show, I've been able to join them just because, you know, I'm out at practice, I'm looking, I'm seeing it. But once the season starts, my main thing will be I'll host a quote-unquote fan and pro show on Fridays afternoons, and then I'll just be involved with the game day on Sunday.
Now, what's it like working with Jim Henderson? You know, he's called some great moments in Saints history there.
It's a tremendous honor. I mean, he makes it really easy for any color analyst. I mean, he's been doing it so long, and, you know, he's worked with a lot of different guys, and, you know, I try not to overlap or step on his feet too much as far as when he's in conversation and giving the play-by-play and just be able to add my little piece to it. So just getting to know him better is always good, and, you know, just the time that we're spending here is a plus, and, you know, you just look forward to it.
Now, you have the restaurant going in New Orleans. How is that going for you, and do you have any other business ventures in the city down there?
Yes, sir. It's going pretty good. You know, that's one of a couple of different restaurants. You know, just have some involvement in PJ's Coffee, is our coffee shop as well. I have a couple of those. So it's coming along pretty good. I mean, you know, every day is a new day. It's a different day. And, you know, you steady learn. I have a pretty good team, not only from a management side, but an ownership side. You know, my partners, they have numerous other restaurants that they're involved with. So just to be able to guide me how they have is a plus for me.
What have you seen from training camp so far? What stands out for you?
A young team. I mean, number nine, the quarterback gives a chance, you know, in pretty much every game. But they've got to get healthy in the back end. They can be really, really strong on defense. Still searching for a consistent pass rush out of someone outside of Cam Jordan, you know. And when you look at it offensively, if they can protect that quarterback, you know, they've got some receivers and tight ends that can be true weapons. So it'll be interesting. You know, it'll be interesting. If I had to put a number on it, I would say, you know, you're probably a ball club that's anywhere can win seven games to probably 10 or 11 games, you know, if the ball bounces right for you. But it's a long season, you know, so it just depends on how much they grow.
Yeah, that ball bouncing right, that might be the most important thing of it all, Deuce, you know, staying healthy and getting the breaks along the way and things like that. How much are you able to keep up with Ole Miss these days?
Oh, I follow it. I'm still following. I'm still a fan, you know, and I know they start camp in a couple days. You know, they've got some pieces there as well, you know, but question mark, those guys they've played, but they hadn't started as far as up front. You know, they've played, but you graduate a lot of experience. So their first, I guess, five games will be the test of time. You know, if they can get through those with a winning record, then they can be pretty special.
What do you think about Chad Kelly? What were your impressions of his season last year and then coming back now as a senior?
Well, it's probably one of the best seasons of any quarterback, you know, and that's high praise, you know, considering Archie and Eli, what they were able to accomplish at Ole Miss. But, I mean, not only at Ole Miss, but in the SEC, you know, you look at his numbers and the stats, and obviously I know the game has changed where you get more plays off now, you know, and it's more of an open passing league now. But, I mean, all things considered, it had to be ranked right there with one of the tops, you know, in SEC history as well as Ole Miss history. You know, the thing for him is to cut down on interceptions, you know, manage his turnovers, but really take that next step as far as leadership role, you know, and just prove and show that last year was not a fluke. And, you know, he's grown to the point where he can lead a team and be successful.
Do you like the changes in the game, Deuce? Do you like the tempo? I mean, the Saints, they've been spreading it around for a long time now. What do you see in the future of the game, I guess?
Well, I mean, I think it's just an evolving game. You know, it'll continue to evolve. You know, the biggest thing that you worry about is just player safety and, you know, how they continue to protect players. That's always going to be an interesting, and you want it to always be a physical football game. You know, so there's a fine line that they have to kind of play and keep in mind there. But, you know, you guys will continue to evolve this game. I mean, they've gotten bigger and faster, you know, from 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So I expect it to continue to evolve.
That was Deuce McAllister, former Ole Miss and New Orleans Saints star, eager to take on a new challenge as the color analyst for the Saints radio team. That's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. This is Parrish Alford, the Ole Miss beat writer. And Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer, we thank you for joining us. I want to remind you to check out The Memo with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, and Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. And we will be back here with you next week for double coverage, all things Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Come join us.